This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We are in the studio here with Anish Chopra, Senior Advisor for the Advisory Board. I think most of our listeners have a vague impression of who Anish Chopra is, but let's start off this interview with just toss it out. Tell me a little bit of your background and how you wound up at your current company, Anish.
John, thank you so much for the chance and inviting me on your program. You know, I have been in the private sector for the overwhelming share of my professional career, but I'd always had this passion for public service. And it was that combination that led me to Washington. I had finished my graduate work at Harvard at the Kennedy School. And looking at the opportunities, I had come from Wall Street. I had the opportunity to return to Wall Street. I wanted to move to Washington, D.C. and the Northern Virginia region in particular, because this gave me the chance to see both a professional opportunity at a growing company, the advisory board company, and the opportunity to mingle and network with individuals who were very active and immersed in public policy, where I had the pleasure of just looking over their shoulders or hearing their stories at cocktail parties. And the story is really one of growth and entrepreneurship. The firm I had the pleasure of joining, the advisory board, was really focused like a hawk on healthcare, how we're going to lower healthcare costs and improve quality and to share best practices about who's doing it where and how it can be replicated, not in theory, but in practice. I had the honor and privilege of serving to run a couple of the divisions of the advisory board and helped it navigate into the technology domain as it had traditionally been a best practices research and publications organization, and had the pleasure of seeing firsthand what could happen if you get the stars aligned. If you adopt technology and you use it the right way, you can actually make a difference. And we studied those best practices and shared them with our members. And when Governor Kaine had been elected, and prior to that, when Governor Warner was in office, I had the beginnings of my connection to public service. Governor Warner named me to the Electronic Health Records IT Task Force and put me on the board of the Medicaid Advisory Committee and the Technology Council, Southern Technology Council, that allowed me to look at economic growth opportunities. And that really whet my appetite for what was possible in public service.
You know, if you fire up your Google box and type in Anish Chopra, you inevitably get this word open, open health, open education, open data. I mean, this seems to be a theme with you in many different areas of your life is opening up things, maybe opening up electronic medical records. And this is something that I see consistent throughout your career.
Well, it's because a lot of those best practices we studied when I was at the advisory board the first round really were the successful stories of individuals that collaborated to make a big difference in their organization. And mostly collaboration traditionally has been about human-to-human relationships, but as the technology industry, the internet became an important engine, collaboration increasingly was defined by the ability to share information. And that's really the lesson that I learned when I entered the public sector. When Governor Kaine asked me to serve as Secretary of Technology, at the beginning it was a little bit of a, what? Open? What is all that? It was really because I saw in healthcare the possibilities. If you use technology the right way, you opened up sources of information, you combine those and you can make a real difference. And I think my public journey from the governor's office onto the White House really proved to me the power of this. We saw a lot of the potential early in my life, and I was so honored to see some of the fruits of that labor during that public service tenure.
I've been following your tweets, and kind of a fascinating tweet this week. You brought up the topic. I remember 1973, first mobile phone was.
Yes.
You tweeted. I said, "This is a guy who I remember." I mean, geez, you know, this is a seminal instance, wasn't it? In 1973, and now they're everywhere.
Well, it's amazing. You know, the pace of technological innovation has been remarkable in our great country. We've really fostered the conditions for a lot of that. But what has motivated me in the public sector, and now that I return to the advisory board, thinking about healthcare even more deeply, it's the combination of the technological potential and the business models or the architecture with which those technologies are deployed. That cell phone from 1973, not really widely deployed in healthcare.
I would say it's a
even
fair statement.
Even today, because our environment really isn't conducive. A doctor that speaks to you on cell phone, not reimbursable. Sees you in person, reimbursable. Mm-hmm. So there are barriers in the business model that you need to have both a technological understanding and advancement with the business model and the conditions that allow that real breakthrough to take hold. And that's the yin and the yang. Yes, you need the cell phone, but you need the conditions that would allow that cell phone to be deployed in a market where it delivers the value it's capable of.
Hashtag mHealth. I mean, it's a very popular tag, and people are discussing exactly that, aren't they?
Well, they are talking about it, but the discussion has been historically 70 or 80% about the improvements in technology. Oh, we are now more capable of leveraging the cell phone for diagnostic imaging and diagnostic capability. In fact, Qualcomm launched a $10 million XPRIZE focused on whether or not, dating back to Star Trek, phones can be the equivalent of that tricorder. And so you've got this technological story in mHealth. You know, can the device do more? Diagnose your conditions, tell you if you're sick, tell you if you need to see a doctor. But it has to also enter the market the right way. How does this support the healthcare infrastructure? And that's a great deal of where I spend my time, both at the advisory board and the work we were doing over at the White House.
I had a guest on a couple weeks back. We talked about mobile technology, and I thought we'd talk about, you know, iPads and everything else. And so I got a magazine article, I think, from InfoWorld. Very first magazine article was hospitals trying to use mobile devices to help improve patient service. I mean, it was top of the article. I mean, this is the first thing you're talking about, a hospital being used. Whereas 10 years ago, you know, I wouldn't think hospitals would be at the bleeding edge of technology, but now they're there because this whole idea of challenge and cost is right on top of everything, isn't it?
Well, I'll tell you, it's there for a couple of reasons. You will often see stories about how kind of early adoption in healthcare. You'll always see the anecdote in the articles, and those are frustrating on the one hand because you sort of hear the story and you're excited about the possibilities, but then nothing scales, because the underlying market dynamics are not all that conducive to bringing about care delivery change. That is now different, thanks to the president, both the investments in healthcare IT in the Recovery Act, but more importantly, the policy changes that came out of the Affordable Care Act about paying for outcomes versus paying for, you know, seeing more patients or billing more effectively. That change, John, more than, hey, great, they adopted the latest iPad, or they've got a cute little story about how they're, you know, FaceTime chatting, you know, between patients and doctors. Those are cute and interesting. They reach scale and have an impact that's measurable when you shift to a payment based on value and outcomes, creating the natural conditions for folks to want to use those technologies in a way that actually improve care delivery. And we're starting to see those case studies. Maybe we'll talk about that a bit further later. But yes, great opportunity, great potential in this sector. It's 18% of the GDP. How could it not be a place where we see the best use of technology deliver impact?
About 1 month ago in Las Vegas, the HIMSS conference, I'm sure there were fist fights over pay for performance in the hallway over that. I mean, that's where thousands of people got together to try to iron out the details in this.
Well, they're thinking about this, but you got to remember, you know, you can take baby steps down the road. So the overwhelming share of healthcare delivery today is governed under the incentives where you need to see more patients. So the doctor is thinking about if they have to naturally think about their economic survival. Instead of seeing 22 patients this year, I need to average 24. And you can't invent a new me. That means I got to squeeze time out of somewhere else. That's the measure of productivity, visits per hour. the paper for performance conversation about the last 5 years has been maybe we'll pay a 1% bonus or a 2% bonus if you get doctors to actually care if I'm healthier after I visit with them, as opposed to just the fact that I visited with them. But if you actually change it dramatically, 80, 90% of my incentives, the Pioneer ACO program, for example, that came out of the Affordable Care Act and the Medicare Innovation Center, creates much more shared incentives and risk so that hospitals and doctors together are now thinking, not just how many patients did I see today, but did I see the right patients today who are most likely to get sick, but for the fact that I can intervene earlier and make a difference in their care delivery so that they can actually be healthier and not sicker. And that sea change is what you saw at HIMSS and carried on in even at South by Southwest, John, where consumer internet entrepreneurs were focused on this opportunity as well.
We come back, I'll take a quick break here, come back, talk about Datapalooza, talk about a gentleman named Todd Park, and all kinds of fun topics. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Anish Chopra, senior advisor at the Advisory Board.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by LearningTree International.
LearningTree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by LearningTree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Vacation time is right around the corner. Why worry about the safety of your home while you're away?
I had Ackerman Security install a system 2 years ago. Now, I leave for vacations with total peace of mind. I know I can trust an Ackerman Certified Monitoring Center. They don't use a third-party monitoring company like most companies, and it's only $18.95 a month.
Call today and get 2 free months of Ackerman's award-winning basic monitoring. 888-999-1070. AckermanSecurity.com.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
I have this dream where I'm the head of an army of cybersecurity engineers fighting cyber terrorists around the world. My strategies lead to real-world applications that are shutting down black hats and bringing them to justice. Government agencies and multinational corporations are seeking me out to... Hang on. This isn't some fantasy. This is exactly what my doctorate in information assurance from Capital College is preparing me for.
The online Doctor of Science degree in Information Assurance at Capital gives you absolute validation as an authority on cybersecurity and safeguarding information assets. Capital College is recognized as a national center of academic excellence in information assurance education by the NSA and DHS.
My dream is becoming a reality because of Capital College. It isn't for everyone, but it's perfect for me.
For a virtual info session on graduate programs at Capital College, visit capital-college.edu/radio. That's capital with an O, -college.edu/radio.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Anish Chopra, senior advisor at a company called The Advisory Board. Although I do want to say something about the White House, don't I? I mean, it almost comes out when I say Anish Chopra, kind of connected together. In the previous block, we talked about all kinds of odds and ends, your background, and we even mentioned mobile devices. And I think, you know, you can't walk down the street or get on the metro without seeing mobile devices. Let's talk a bit more about you and mobile devices and maybe some of the initiatives you worked in that regard.
Well, this is probably one of the most important topics for long-term economic growth and something the president cared very deeply about. And I'm really thankful. Just a few weeks back, President signed into law the National Wireless Initiative that he spoke about for the first time in his State of the Union address back in 2011, but called for even earlier. In fact, when the president outlined his vision for long-term economic growth, he emphasized the importance of the country investing in the building blocks of innovation, which you traditionally would think of as infrastructure, roadways, railways, and runways, but increasingly, as you've just noted, is in digital form. And mobile broadband is definitely an area of economic growth and potential. Unfortunately, policy can sometimes be a limiting factor, if not a catalyst. You sometimes want it to be a positive, and it can also be a negative. And it turns out that spectrum, the airwaves that allow that information to flow wirelessly, is a finite resource. And it looked from most projections that over this decade, we would reach this proverbial spectrum crunch. And what would be more frustrating for the American economic story is to find out that we've made such progress on mobile broadband and the apps economy, but only to run into this spectrum crunch and say, we can't cross over. We're now congested. We're, you know, the equivalent of a four-lane traffic jam that we can't get out of. So President, looking at this from the long term, made the judgment in his State of the Union that the country needed to ensure, maybe not tomorrow, but over this next decade, we needed to double the amount of capacity available for mobile broadband. And he called for a national wireless initiative specifically to free up in market incentives or through market incentives, spectrum that's today used for other economic purposes that could be made available for mobile broadband or any other purpose that might generate a better economic return. And he called for this initiative that did three things, and he signed it into law, John, and I'm really excited about talking about any of these elements. The first was he created a mechanism called an incentive auction that allows folks who currently use spectrum but are willing to, if paid, or compensated, put it up for auction to see if someone else could do something like a mobile broadband provider. That is an estimated $100 billion economic boon to the country over the next decade. This decision to create an incentive auction authority that allows the Federal Communications Commission to essentially let the market do its thing and create those conditions. Second, President said, look, one of the last areas of the 9/11 Commission's last undone work was to create that interoperability between first responders, firemen, police officers, EMS. And he said, look, we need to give the same, you know, broadband tools that you and I have in our consumer lives to these heroes so that they can keep us safe. So he invested $7 billion from these incentive auction proceeds to help build out this nationwide 4G network. And finally, President also acknowledged that in a finite resource, we can only do but so much under the current model, which is you clear and auction the spectrum. We're going to have to make investments in research and development so that we can actually move to a new model of spectrum sharing. And the third leg of this proverbial stool was the commitment the president made and the resources in the investments in this wireless initiative to put us on the path of spectrum sharing and infrastructure sharing so that the country will turn this scarce resource into one of abundance.
No, it's funny. We look back in 1973 and we laugh about that first cell phone that weighed about 20 pounds or something, you know?
Correct.
And it's blossomed to this. And perhaps your grandchildren, you'll be sitting in a rocking chair one day and you'll say, well, Sonny, I can remember when I was involved in this initiative that allows you to do X, Y, and Z. And we don't know what it's going to allow them to do, but I think you have to set the stage for it.
Well, this is a classic example of government intervention in the economy. We invest in the infrastructure, we set the market conditions that spur private sector innovation and entrepreneurship, and hopefully in one of our later segments we'll talk about this, we then point the engine of this technological capacity towards the big challenges of our day in healthcare, in energy, in education, and the opportunities for innovation in mobile health, mobile energy, mobile education are limitless. And we'll talk about those, I'm sure, over the course of this interview. But that's the formula for long-term economic growth. The government invests in that infrastructure, sets the rules of the road, opens up data and other resources to spark that innovation that we will look back sitting on that grandparent chair and say, wow, we've lowered healthcare costs while improving outcomes. We've delivered education for every child. We've given every energy home or consumer the chance to be the most efficient they can be with those limited resources. And we found a way to do what people thought wasn't possible to do many, many years ago. And I think a lot of that will be sparked by this wireless capacity.
I read many authors, and there's a young fellow named John Lehrer. He wrote a book on creativity, and he has all kinds of insights with creativity. And I think that was probably one of your challenges, is how to get people to create, how to get people to be innovate. And tell me about this HHS Innovation Program. What kind of concepts, were you involved in that, weren't you?
Well, in fact, yes, you're referring to the Open Health Data Initiative at HHS that my brother-in-arms, Todd Park, brought to life and really took it beyond any expectations. It was an idea that was born actually in the transition team. There's a deputy secretary at HHS named Bill Corr, who is, honest to goodness, one of the greatest public servants in our nation, one of the most respected and thoughtful leaders. And Bill had this idea that we connect to the core mission of HHS, that we improve health and healthcare in every community in the country. Now, part of that is health insurance, and you saw that debate, but the core mission was to improve health in the community. And he asked the question, with all of these technologies, is there a way to spark a conversation at the community level to improve health powered by information? And Todd Park was named a CTO of HHS, and we worked very closely with Todd. The president asked for us to create recommendations for an open government directive, is one of my first homework assignments. And the community of leaders in the agencies, health, energy, education, NASA, you name it, each of them had the chance to grab this open government directive and make it their own. And Todd grabbed it.
You know, Todd didn't just fall off the turnip truck. I mean, this guy was very successful in the private world, and he transferred, and all these down-in-the-trenches skills, he transferred them to a great position right now, huh?
Well, listen, he is an entrepreneur in residence to the purest sense.
Now, that would be a good title for him, I think.
Well, you know? But it's true. And the reality is, Todd came in with an entrepreneur's instinct. And I would say there are at least three attributes of Todd that I love. Number one, the guy is relentlessly focused on results, and results in time periods that are reflective more of his entrepreneurial background than perhaps budget cycles or Washington traditionally might view. So every 90 days, he'd lift up and say, where have I accomplished? What have I done? So number one, he had this relentless focus on results, and he still does. I shouldn't say was. That was his HHS role. He's doing it even better now at the White House. Number two, he understood the potential of scaling up, not just a single pilot project that one would do for fun out in the corner, but by opening up data more generally. It wasn't going to benefit one little neighborhood, but the entire healthcare economy, and those who wish to join the healthcare economy could take advantage of this. So he focused on the right things, opening up the data sets that were critical in every agency that has been pursuing this vision, but he, more than others, really grabbed it and looked for every nook and cranny inside HHS to find the data sets that would have impact. And third, perhaps most importantly, he realized that the 80-20 rule wasn't in the direction of publishing the data being the 80 and making it work the 20. He recognized the inverse. And he focused his time and attention on the use of the data and encouraging it, marketing it, celebrating it. He knocked on every door in this country and anybody that would listen. Can you do something with this healthcare data to make an innovation that would improve the quality and or outcomes and or cost picture in American healthcare, neighborhood by neighborhood? Folks who hadn't thought about healthcare decided to experiment and tinker. Folks who have been in healthcare for a long time decided to try something new. And individuals at the staff level dove in. That's the spirit of the Data Palooza.
Comes back to the open information. What can you do with this open information to help reduce medical costs for everyone in the world? That's a great idea. Let's take a quick break. We come back, talk more about your Data Palooza, maybe a little bit about the White House and some initiatives are coming up, including big data. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Anish Chopra, who's a senior advisor at the Advisory Board.
And now, Technology Insights with Tom Frana, President and CEO of Vion Corporation, speaking with John Gehring, former CIO and Director of Strategic Planning and Information for DISA.
You mentioned ACE being awarded and being a success. Were there any surprises, side benefits that came out of the ACE contract that you didn't realize the day you put the contract out for bid?
Absolutely. We were looking at replication and mirroring, and in the process of doing that, when we unleashed this innovation in Vion, all of a sudden, this technique of capacity on demand became an enabler of the consolidation. The consolidation of the mainframe processing centers was something we had not thought about, but it turned out to be a huge benefit.
For over 32 years, Vion has been the storage experts in the most demanding data center environments. For almost 10 years, Vion has pioneered storage capacity on demand with a level of peace of mind service its customers have come to expect. To hear more of Technology Insights, visit Vion.com, V-I-O-N.com.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Defense Secretary Leon Panetta is brushing aside Iranian government claims that it's recovered data from a U.S. spy drone it captured last year. Panetta says he would seriously question their ability to do what they say they've done. Iranian officials claimed over the weekend they were building a copy of the drone and that they'd recovered information that the aircraft was used to spy on Osama bin Laden in Pakistan weeks before he was killed. I'm J.J. Green.
We have a capsized boat, two people in the water.
Every day, EADS North America builds and supports helicopters for the Coast Guard, Army, National Guard, Navy, and Customs and Border Protection.
Rescue swimmer is in the water.
EADS delivers helicopters that save lives every day, including those bright orange Coast Guard helicopters you see patrolling our nation's capital.
We got them. We're heading back.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Governments at all levels are operating in an era of fiscal austerity. Though revenues may be falling, the demand for critical services continues. Join host Michael Keegan as he welcomes Seth Diamond, Commissioner of the New York City Department of Homeless Services, as they discuss New York City's response to the challenge of homelessness. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly one in three children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Kim Natovitz of the Natovitz Group, where she'll talk about long-term care insurance planning. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, serving the entire D.C. metro area. If you'd like to know more about our firm, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Here's your chance to get out for some fun. Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News.
The
Hot Glass Festival in Stanton, Virginia is probably the very best place to see glass artists at work anywhere in the region. This takes place April 28th and 29th from 10 to 5 each day. You might even get to help an artist make an ornament. It's all at the Sunspots Glass Facility in Stanton, Virginia. There will also be stone sculpting going on across the street from the festival. You can find out more about all of this on page 29 of the April Recreation News, or, of course, at recreationnews.com.
What about something a little closer?
Well, the 34th annual Celtic and Highland Festival takes place at the Jefferson Patterson Park and Museum in Southern Maryland on April the 28th. They have all kinds of activities from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and then concerts and dance performances begin at 6 on 3 stages. You can find out more about this at jeffpat.org.
Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News. I'm Ruben Gomez.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Anish Chopra, senior advisor for a company called The Advisory Board. Perhaps the listeners put him in a different position like I do, but I'll say The Advisory Board and try to get comfortable with it. We talked about all kinds of different things. We threw out this big fancy word, datapalooza. No, this isn't greater than a petabyte or a zettabyte or something. It's a whole different concept. Tell us about this datapalooza coming up.
The June 5th and 6th, the Department of Health and Human Services will have its third annual Datapalooza, and it is unbelievable the kind of creativity that you see that is brought out, frankly, by the initiative. The basic principle is this. If we are to improve healthcare, and I am of the opinion that this is the time in America when we have to invent our way out of the challenges, that we're going to have to find a way to innovate to lower costs and improve quality. This will come from three very critical forces. One, we have to have an infrastructure that's digital in nature, focused on doctors and hospitals. That's why the president invested in the Recovery Act. You can't drive innovation and productivity if you don't have that kind of baseline infrastructure. And so, thankfully, we now have doubled the number of hospitals and doctors. Doctors in particular is the doubling that have adopted electronic health records and are putting them to use. We're now over 40%. Second, you got to have information. You got to have access to the knowledge, not just of what works and what doesn't work in peer-reviewed articles and journals, but in today's world for my patient population. Imagine a doctor looking at the 2,000 patients they're responsible for and saying, which 50 do I need to reach out to because they're the most likely to get sick? Information will fuel that kind of analytic and that kind of intervention. And third, you got to think about ways to pay me as a doctor differently, or a hospital that encourages me to think about patients that way. You know what? They left my office. I gave them a medication. Well, how do I know if they filled it? How do I know if they're lacking of filling it, or that they've taken half the pills they're expected to, might get them in the emergency room a month from now? What can I do to make sure that they get that done? The Datapalooza is the manifestation of all of these three forces coming together and creating a new opportunity for startups, for nonprofits, for federal and state and local employees in the government, for regular Joe citizens to say, I think I can contribute to this care delivery change. I think I can create an app that assists physicians in caring for patients. I think I could create an app to convince patients to take that med when they otherwise weren't going to do it because I've got a better way of doing that. The Datapalooza is a chance for us to see how Americans deliver against this potential in ways we have not yet even imagined.
If you're listening on the internet, you want to Google data, D-A-T-A-P as in Paul, A-L-O-O-Z-A. There's no T in there. Sounds Italian, though. Datapalooza. So Datapalooza. And believe it or not, this seems like a frivolous title. It originated at HHS. I mean, you'd think HHS would have a data conference. No, a Datapalooza. HHS, and what's this? Health Data Consortium they got together. And this is the second one, isn't it?
This is actually the third. The first one was run by HHS as a lean startup. Again, Todd is the one who I think gets the credit for coining the phrase Datapalooza.
Well, blame him for that. Datapalooza. Sounds so frivolous, doesn't it?
It might have gone through some department of communications, but I don't know for sure. But I can assure you that that's how we celebrate it and encourage participation in it. It is now a nonprofit organization that's come together to put these activities on, and not just in Washington for its signature initiative, but to host events around the country. In fact, April 13th and 14th, I have the honor and privilege of joining 2021 in Blacksburg, Virginia, the Hokie Health Codathon, which is a version of Datapalooza, but at the more local or regional level. They're going to have one in Louisiana at the end of the month. And the point here is that it's part of the larger narrative that we worked on bringing innovation to the public sector, and more specifically, launching the Open Innovators Toolkit. If you visit whitehouse.gov/open/toolkit, you will see 20 ideas, not in theory, but that have been implemented in practice across the government. We've spent a great deal of time in healthcare, but we haven't talked about energy and education and NASA and commerce. But across this portfolio of 20 ideas are specific and tangible things that anyone at any level of government, if you're a local employee, if you're at the state level, or if you're an agency employee here at the federal level, you can take a look at these 20 ideas and see yourself executing or leading in any one of them. And that's the point. These are 20 ideas that are like Datapalooza, but are a broad range organized in four basic categories. One, how we choose to open up data as a new tool of government. Number two, how do we think of our role as impatient convener, bringing stakeholders in our ecosystem together, whether we have regulatory authority or just moral or spiritual authority to bring folks together. Third, issuing these new challenges, prizes, and competitions. It's again at the heart of the Datapalooza, a series of challenges and prizes that are sprinkled throughout the event. And last but not least, we honor and celebrate the heroes, the frontline innovators that are making a difference, whether they are folks in the community, folks in government, folks in the nonprofit sector, or startups ready to make a next $1 billion hit off of inventing one of these apps. These four principles of open innovation, we see great potential to execute on these. And the good news, John, they don't require often a change in law, and they often don't require extra budget above and beyond what the agency's already doing.
A couple months ago, we had one of those startups in the studio here from Silicon Valley, a company called Cloudera, Mike Olson, and he talked about big data.
Yes, he did.
Lo and behold, in March, down at the White House, your old stomping grounds, they had this big dog and pony show about big data again, and it's even on Twitter. It's the hashtag BigDataRD. Were you involved in that, or what's this big data all about?
So one of my responsibilities, I held the title of Chief Technology Officer, but also the Associate Director for Technology in the Office of Science and Technology Policy under the brilliant Dr. John Holdren. That latter title had me responsible for the program called NITERD, the Networking and Information Technology R&D coordinating body. This is a lot of inside Washington kind of stuff. But the most important point, John, for this is that every couple of years, Congress requires that external thought leaders, the best and the brightest in networking and information technology, issue a report to the president and to Congress on what we should be doing, where should we be investing in research and development around networking and IT. By December of 2010, the President's Council of Advisors of Science and Technology issued that report, and it was groundbreaking. It acknowledged that there are investments underway in big data, but more should be done. You saw the manifestation of that in March, under the leadership of my dear friend Tom Khalil, a true policy entrepreneur. Tom gathered all the federal agencies who were already investing in big data, either applications or infrastructure, and asked them to come together in a collaborative spirit to see if we can launch a coordinated program, much like his National Robotics Initiative and the National Nanotechnology Initiative that he authored back when he was in the Clinton administration. So coordinating R&D investment, an important priority of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. And you can't think of a better topic today than big data. We are seeing the need for this and the hunger and appetite for breakthroughs and innovation here all across the board. And it's not just in the traditional technology domains, but it's in the application areas of health and energy and education. And that's what's got me so excited about the White House initiative.
Got to go back to the future a little bit here. One of the interesting organizations that participating in this is DARPA. And if we go back to 1973, well, didn't DARPA have something to do with something innovative in the 60s or 70s?
That's right.
Well, they had something to do with the internet, you know? We had Vint Cerf sitting right here a couple months back, and he talked about it. And now we have DARPA is doing the exact thing with big data.
Yes, they are, as are other federal agencies. And I think you're going to see a tremendous opportunity, not just for the applications and the investments that will be rolled out in the coming years, but also in the human capital. capital, the people that are now going to be working on those graduate programs. I mean, just take a look at almost every billion-dollar segment of the technology industry has its origins in some federal R&D program, even Google. National Library study on looking for information, and that was the seed that helped them think about launching Google. And you already mentioned DARPA's role on the internet. You can come across nearly every innovation in networking and information technology that has generated a $1 billion industry or more, and you can trace back its origins to an R&D program, human capital. Graduate students, professors, tinkering thanks to federal investments in R&D and making a difference in our economy.
Even the DOD is being involved. They're going to have a series of prizes for people being able to use big data. I mean, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around the Pentagon being this flexible and innovative, but they're even being pushed in that direction. We're going to have to take a quick break and come back and finish up our discussion with Anish Chopra. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Anish Chopra, Senior Advisor at the Advisory Board.
Here at Best Buy, we have expanded our selection of HD Radio car stereo receivers. New HD Radio car stereos are in store and offer you the best in digital entertainment and information. More music from local HD2, HD3 radio stations, iPhone, iPod control, digital traffic, iTunes tagging, and more. Best Buy has the leading brands, Alpine, Pioneer, Kenwood, JVC, lots to choose from, with prices as low as $120. Here at Best Buy, we recommend HD Radio technology.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit capitalareafoodbank.org.
Here's Adrian Gardner, CIO of NASA Goddard, on the Federal Executive Forum on Big Data, sponsored by Informatica.
The issue really now, we'll be able to visualize the data more like infographics and help make sense of scale and data points in ways that we have never thought of in the past. The other one is sort of a societal kind of impact I'll see is I think there will be winners and losers economically.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Government leaders have one thing in common. They know data is their biggest asset, but that asset is growing exponentially. Data is expected to grow by as much as 44 times over the next year to a staggering 35.2 zettabytes. Welcome to the era of big data. How will your agency effectively process the volume of data to support missions, serve citizens, and provide the right information to the right individuals? Informatica helps government agencies to move, take in, and manage their data, regardless of how much, what kind, or where it is. Visit Informatica.com.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by LearningTree International.
LearningTree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality, instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by LearningTree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
The Washington Business Journal is seeking nominations for its sixth annual CFO of the Year Awards, recognizing CFOs and other financial executives in the Washington area for their outstanding performance as corporate financial stewards. Are you or someone you know a CFO star? Nominate them online at washingtonbusinessjournal.com/nomination. Deadline is fast approaching. Save the date for the award ceremony, Thursday, July 19th at the Omni Shoreham Hotel.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Patrick Goulet is chief of the Office of Special Counsel's USERRA unit. The Uniform Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act says employers can't penalize returning troops for their military service.
OPM wanted to make it clear that the federal government should be leading the way in terms of protecting veterans' job rights, and that complaints against the government will not be tolerated and should be resolved, and that's where OSC comes in.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Anish Chopra, who is a senior advisor at the Advisory Board, although maybe listeners know him from a different occupation. You know, if you listen to the three blocks we just finished, this thing open comes up, and this thing about innovation comes up, and innovation comes up, and jobs and creating jobs. I think this is kind of a theme throughout a lot of your activities here. Is that right?
It is, because there's a chance now to both. It's a two-for-one deal, John. We have the potential in our country to solve big problems, in part because of this movement towards openness, but at the same time create the jobs and industries of the future. So there will be a startup in healthcare that finds a way to connect the needs of patients with the opportunities for those providers willing to care for them in a new delivery model. My firm, the Advisory Board, is knee-deep in this. In fact, we have a pretty significant investment in a program called Crimson, which itself was a startup that the Advisory Board had acquired to allow hospitals and physician networks and health systems to essentially transition to this value-based care delivery environment and have all the IT support infrastructure they need to manage those patients. So these kinds of startups are going to create the jobs and industries of the future and lower costs and improve outcomes. That's the story you're going to see repeated in health and energy and education. But there's a common theme. This is about celebrating America's history as an entrepreneurial country. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why I'm so proud of the great work the president has done. This week, the president will be signing into law the Jobs Act, a bipartisan piece of legislation that was born out of a very open process the president launched to establish a Startup America program, to call the country to action, to convince the private sector to support entrepreneurs with their resources. And over $1 billion have been organized under Steve Case's leadership to support entrepreneurs, no taxpayer dollars, to ensure that the government does its part, thinking anew at regulatory flexibility, finding out where we are creating barriers that we can break down, creating opportunities that may not have existed before. And you saw that in the signing of the Jobs Act, with the president introducing new tools to allow individuals to raise money online through programs like crowdfunding, and to allow promising companies that wish to go public to do so in a thoughtful way with an IPO on-ramp, and to ensure that we have the rules of the road that strike the right balance between desiring job creation and ensuring investor protections. We also see an importance in entrepreneurship in going after these growth markets that are important for the country. Health, energy, and education. These are the themes we've talked about, John. And a great deal of the Startup America program was focused on what is it that we can do to ensure a sufficient investor's thesis. Why should I invest in telemedicine? Why should I invest in gaming for learning? Why should I invest in energy efficiency applications? Well, it's because we've created a better climate for those companies to be successful. We've lowered barriers to entry. We've increased the adoption of the necessary infrastructure. And we're opening up all this data that can be combined to create products and services that entrepreneurs can take to market.
I want to jump from entrepreneurs to you, talk more about you. People see in magazines and they go, hey, that guy must be a movie star or something. I wonder if he's really a card-carrying nerd.
Okay.
So we're going to give you a 10-question test for the benefit of my listeners so we can find out if you really are, in fact, a card-carrying
Uh-oh.
Nerd.
Shoot.
So you better be a high grader in this test, buddy, or you're in big trouble. You bought your first computer.
Oh, my father bought an Apple IIe, and that must have been in the 1980s.
Early 80s.
And I was trained on a TRS-80. We called it the Trash 80.
Trash 80 in 1980,
We learned to code in BASIC in fifth grade, actually. I took a course.
We had a guy in the studio. He remembered his serial number on his Apple IIe.
Oh. So can't remember that.
You're your first cell phone.
1997. I had a Sprint contract. I was living up in, it was actually when I moved to Washington, D.C.
Great. And you have a Twitter feed, we know that. Do you have a blog?
Well, at the White House, it was whitehouse.gov/CTO. I'm now in my private life, and I may be turning on a blog in the near future, but not one right now.
Do you use any services for online personal backup?
Oh, of course. My family and I, we use a Dropbox, but I have to be, loving everybody. We got, a whole range of these services online.
Still got to be political here. And what kind of smartphone do you have?
I have the iPhone 4GS.
And now the number of apps on this?
Oh, I probably have about 40 apps.
Okay. What kind of tablet device do you have?
I have the iPad.
Social networking sites you participate in?
I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Quora.
Okay, and here's the key question. The last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
Electronic.
We score pretty high on this. You're probably in the higher range here, It's not bad, not too shabby. People always look at people like you and they go, I wonder what he's really like at home, Does he really embrace his technology or is he, hands off?
Well, it depends on who you ask. My wife will tell you that she bemoans the fact that whenever the wireless router goes down or the printer connection fails, that I am not nearly as effective as one would assume. When she says, hey, wait a minute, you're supposed to be the chief technology officer. Fix this.
In the United States, you got to go out and fix this thing.
Man. Oh, boy, the network's
to be in your
down.
Position.
What am I going to do?
The whole rest of your life, you're going to have to carry that around with you.
But you know what? We focused on the policy implications, not the underlying technology.
Yeah, I try to use that too. It doesn't work. Not with your wife. we've had a fellow here from the Pentagon. He talked about the blue button.
Yes, sir.
And you like to talk about something called the green button. And
the My Data button.
And the My Data, all kinds of buttons out here. Well, tell us about this green data button and what it's all about, a green button.
Well, it's fascinating. In energy, there has been a great deal of talk around the supply of alternative energy, wind and solar and nuclear. And people describe this as an all-of-the-above approach to supply the nation with the energy resources that it needs.
What about the other end, huh?
But the other end is the efficiency end. And it was amazing to me. And I'll tell you about Green Button in a minute, but I'll just share this. A 63-year-old grandmother in San Diego this summer of 2011 reduced her energy bill 46%. And the reason she was successful is she used a startup company called Simple Energy that was capable of producing a gaming-like experience for her. So she knew what her neighbors and friends were doing in terms of their energy consumption. And so based on that feedback loop, she changed her personal behavior. Now, Green Button was built on a very simple premise that the customer is entitled to an electronic copy of his or her energy consumption data. And thankfully, President Obama had called for a public-private partnership convened by NIST, our National Institute of Standards and Technology, under my dear friend Pat Gallagher, to organize the community of private sector leaders. This is not the government telling them what to do, but it's the impatient convening role of creating the table and inviting them in so they could standardize. I don't care what widget you use to calculate your energy consumption in hourly increments, provide it back to the customer in a format that's standardized. And so under the president's leadership, NIST had helped collaborate on a standard that, you would call Priority Action Plan 10. John, we don't have a big Priority Action Plan 10 movement because that's a bit wonky. But we wanted to translate that and make it more accessible to people. So we called it the Green Button. And I issued this challenge in the fall of 2011. Asking the industry if they could close that last mile. You guys have done a great job designing this technical standard. Let's put it into production. And let's not do it in years. Let's do it in months. And three of the California utilities, the largest, PG&E, San Diego Gas and Electric, and SoCal Edison, stepped up to the plate. The CIO, Karen Austin at PG&E, said, Anish, I'll host the meeting. Come on out. Let's see what we can do. And in one three-hour session, we not only raised the idea of doing Green Button, but we reached consensus. And everybody walked out of that room saying, we pledge to get this done. And by golly, by 90 days, they got it done. Over 7 million Californians back in January had the ability to download their energy consumption data in a standardized format going back a year. And today, thanks to the president's leadership, that is now scaling from 7 million to 27 million households by the end of 2012. This is an exciting movement, one that's already fostered hundreds of apps that have been launched and nudged and cajoled out from the entrepreneurial community, and they're starting to have an impact in energy efficiency for homes and hopefully soon businesses.
Anish, I got to nudge you out of the studio because you got to go to the White House and we got to wrap this up. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Anish Chopra, Senior Advisor at the Advisory Board.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.